This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Well, let me tell you, in the past, whenever lawyers decide to march, it is only when we believe there is a very serious problem. It doesn't happen every year, as you probably realize. It happens only when we think there is a major crisis that needs addressing. And we think, at this point in time, there is such a crisis of confidence.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We're continuing our collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, who have been releasing a specially curated and thematic Freedom Film playlist every weekend since early June, which they've dubbed the Weekend Watch with Freedom Film Fest. And this is happening on their YouTube channel. So this weekend, the playlist will once again feature films that fall under the theme People's Movement for Change. And today we'll be discussing the film When Lawyers Walk, which was directed by Mian Li. So this short documentary covers the 2007 Walk of Justice, which saw more than 2,000 lawyers and activists heading to Putrajaya to demand reforms to the country's judiciary. And this was after a scandal erupted over claims of political meddling in the appointment of judges. So here to refresh our memories about that incident are lawyers Edmund Bond and Amir Hamza Arshad from Amir Bond Advocates, who played a big part in that march. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet.
Hi, Julian. Hi. We're good. Thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. So we're going to talk about something that happened quite a while ago. And I think a lot of us has forgotten about this incident. So thank you. And please remind us, you know, what it was all about. So take me back to then. I think the then Bar Council president, Ambiga Srinivasan, said at the time of that march, right, when lawyers walk, something is wrong. Remind us about what, you know, the incidents that led to that walk of justice. Amir, maybe you can help us with that.
All right, thanks. You're taking me down back memory lane. What happened, I think it was in 2007, could be sometime in the month of March. I stand corrected, Edmund. There was a video clip that was leaked to the public, and it was carried by Malaysia Kini. And the video clip portrays a senior member of the bar having conversation over the phone where several issues were discussed. And in the conversation, there was this talk about the appointment of judges, among others. So if you watch the video, you would see that there is this suggestion that there's some sort of like meddling or interference by individuals who have no legal rights whatsoever to be involved in the appointment of judges. So that really triggered the entire episode. And when I watched that video and read the news that was carried by Mr. Kini, I was so angry. I was so livid at that point in time. And I received a call from Rajan from the Bar Council. And we had some discussion, and I think something has to be done. Writing memos or complaining to the judiciary or to the authorities is not going to be enough. We really need to do something. And I think that's how the idea of having a walk, a protest, came about. And I wrote a short write-up, posted up on the Mission Bar website, and suggesting that we should march, we should protest. And it received traction, support from members of the bar. And I even called Edmund. I remember I called Edmund and said, look, Edmund at the point in time was a member of the Bar Council. I said he has to raise this issue in the Bar Council and persuade the Bar Council to have a walk. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember. That's what started the whole thing.
Okay, all right. And let's just talk about the case first before we get into the march, right? So, you know, once that video was released, as you mentioned, it was released on Malaysia Kini, and I believe it was members of the then opposition who had released this footage, right? What action was actually taken by the government of the day in response to those, you know, really incriminating evidence, actually?
Positive things happen as a result of the revelation of the video clip and the protest. We could see that the government of the day knew that something had to be done. So there was a Royal Commission of Inquiry to inquire into that episode. that took place. And subsequent to that, we had the Judicial Appointments Commission Act 2019 that was legislated, whereby the Judicial Appointments Commission was set up, and that commission is supposed to oversee the appointments of judges and judicial commissioners. So as a result of that protest, something good came about. Positive changes happened. The appointment of judges seems to be more transparent with the Judicial Appointments Commission. So that is one of the major things that had happened. And apart from that, it created some sort of awareness among the members of the public that at times you may have to resort to civil disobedience in order to get changes to be done or to be implemented.
But the government before the march was actually denying and talking about having to authenticate the video clip before the march. So the government was sort of protecting the identity of the person in the video. And that's what was really strange for many of us, especially when the video had both audio and visual. So yeah, we had to do something about that.
Mm-hmm. And thus the march, right? I mean, you know, why did that video touch a nerve? You know, it so many lawyers, you were furious. I mean, why did it touch that video in particular? Why did it touch such a nerve? You know, why did it anger so many people?
At that time, remember it was under PM Badawi. Mm-hmm. There was already much talk about political instability because within his own party, there was dissatisfaction, and we can see parallels in what has happened in recent years with UMNO and Bersatu now. The PM was being attacked from all sides. To his credit, I think his team, perhaps accidentally on purpose, did not really clamp down as much on dissent as Mahathir before him. Mm-hmm. And that's why people talk about Badawi as being sort of a sleeping prime minister, because he didn't do very much. But yet, there was, by accident or by an unconscious type of activism, he allowed more spaces in civil society. But what the video provoked was that it seemed like the then Chief Justice could be influenced on who he could pick as judges. And I think the idea was if someone from the bar could be so influential in making appointments or proposing appointments for judges, what more about cases? The senior lawyer already at that time had allegations of him having an influence on judges deciding on cases before him. Mm-hmm. So within the legal fraternity, there was these alarm bells about what was happening. And I think no doubt in our minds at that time, the video was authentic. So the way of appointing judges then was very informal. There was phone calls here and there, and then you would appoint judges. But as Ami mentioned, now with the JAC, it's better. There's more transparency and there's more accountability.
Okay.
And if I can add on, Juliet, I mean, sure. It is also important to stress that the effectiveness of any judiciary depends on its perceived legitimacy. So the public must believe that judiciary is legitimate. So when you have this video coming out of the public, it questions the legitimacy of the appointment of certain judges, rightly or wrongly. Yeah. So when that perception exists, it is going to destroy the independence and the integrity of the judiciary. So that's why it touched on a lot of nerves, and I think we need to ensure that the judiciary is legitimate, is independent, and could not be influenced by either a member of the bar or politician for that matter. So a successful judiciary is one whose members are appointed following a proper process and not based on a certain calls being made by certain individuals.
So many parallels, aren't we seeing, to what's happening today as well in so many situations? We always talk about the 1988 Malaysian constitutional crisis, right? I mean, that was a huge thing. And, you know, now we always talk about it as a dark time in our history. Did this tie in with that at all? Did this 2007 incident sort of raise up memories of that and, you know, what happened back in 1988?
Yeah, the independence of judges has always been questioned. The issue about Saleh Abbas and the sacking by Mahathir, even through a tribunal of judges pursuant to the constitution, has always been criticized by the bar as being cosmetic.
Yeah.
So yes, it raises the issue. At that time, there were many judges, and you know, even in academic circles, I've come across articles talking about the politicization of judges and how judges have decided cases in favor of the government. So there are academics outside our country that have analyzed cases where judges have decided for or against the government, and it can be seen that during that period, there were many cases that were decided for the government in spite of the law. So at that time, there was the renewed call for apologies to be made to the judges that were wrong during the 88. And if you remember, Zaid Ibrahim was the then Home Minister, and he had actually advised PM Badawi in what was actually a formal ceremony. There was an apology by the Malaysian government, and there were damages paid. So yes, there were parallels, and of course, this walk for justice, cemented the argument the bar has always been making that we need to have a more independent judiciary in the country.
Mm-hmm. So there was a lot at stake, right, when you guys decided to march. There was so much that needed to be done and to be said, and in a very forceful way, unfortunately, because you know other methods were just not working, isn't it?
Yeah. The government wasn't really listening. To Badawi's credit, I think even the police were afraid of clamping down so violently against lawyers. There were 2,000, 3,000 lawyers that were marching. And as you know, it's not often that lawyers march. The march many years ago against the Societies Act by the senior lawyers ended up in a court case where the senior lawyers were warned. And then there was an informal march when Zainul Zakaria was cited for contempt. But these marches were not really Bar Council led. I think this was the first time that Bar Council led such a big march in the headquarters of the government of Malaysia. And that's why I think it's so historic for it to be recorded and documented. I agree with you that many younger people forget about a lot of these activists' activities and initiatives. And that's why it's important to document these and remember how this came about.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to go for a... Sorry, Amir, did you want to say something?
No, I just want to say that lawyers need to take a more proactive role in terms of creating awareness, in terms of educating the public, taking up causes on behalf of the public. So knowing the law is one thing, knowing how the system works is one thing, but there were times that merely going to court is not going to be enough. So sometimes you need to create awareness, and by having that march, we had created awareness and we had educated the public on the importance of the independence of the judiciary.
Okay. All right. And, you know, we're just going to go for a quick break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you more about that day itself, you know, the day of the march. I'm speaking today to Edmund Bond and Amir Hamza Arshad. They're both lawyers with Amir Bond Advocates. They were also, they played a huge part in the 2007 Walk of Justice, which saw more than 2,000 lawyers and activists heading to Putrajaya to demand reforms to the country's judiciary. And all of this was documented in the film called When Lawyers Walk, directed by Mian Lee, which is being re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network's playlist. We're going to come back after this break and find out more. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is really where it all started, at the Bar Council, where the decision was made to march when the tape was revealed.
You see, he has now asked for 6 court of appeal judges so that he can put his man before retire. correct.
Well, I didn't walk with change in mind. I walked because I was angry and furious. And I wanted effectively to say to the people who were sitting in the corridors of power, listen, you are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so we, the people, we are here in front of you to remind you of that.
It was long overdue. There's been way too many breaches of human rights that had taken place in my short history or experience with the movement. And the bar had so far only come out with statements, EGMs, forums, all in grand hotels and comfortable zones. So for them to actually make the walk, it was a big step. And I think it woke up and shook the nation and the middle class generally. Anyway, the issue of judiciary is way too serious for us to just send another press statement.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today are Edmund Bond and Amir Hamza bin Arshad. They are both from Amir Bond Advocates, and we're talking about the 2007 Walk of Justice, which saw more than 2,000 lawyers and activists heading over to Putrajaya to demand reforms to the country's judiciary. And all of this, you know, that march, what happened leading up to it, what happened after, is documented in the film When Lawyers Walk, which was directed by Mien Lee, and that film is being re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network's playlist. So before the break, both Edmund and Amir shared, you know, why this, you know, touched such a nerve with so many lawyers, why they wanted to have the march. But now, gentlemen, maybe you can tell me about the march itself. So, okay, we know the idea came about because you really wanted to make a statement. And Amir, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you were the principal instigator, for this march.
Yes, that's correct, Juliet. Like I mentioned earlier on, I just sparked when I watched the video, when I read the news. Idea was mooted. I wrote something on a Mission Bar website, and subsequently I contacted Edmund, asked him to raise this issue with the council. But at that point in time, even without the blessing of the council, I have received numerous calls from members of the bar who had expressed their support. And they said, look, if the bar council is going to spearhead this protest, we can organize among ourselves. We will then march, or we will then protest to show our displeasure of what had transpired. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, of course, it would be great if we had the bar council leading the members of the bar. But if for whatever reason the bar council decided against the walk, because at that point in time, we still had the provision in the Police Act which requires license to be applied before any assembly or procession could take place. So we decided, if the bar council is not with us, we will do it as members of the bar, as Rakyat Malaysia. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, I think Edmund had a role to play in persuading the bar council in moving this walk for justice.
Yeah, Edmund, tell me about that. I know the idea wasn't accepted, right? How did you change minds?
Yeah, so again, it's historical because we then had the Police Act 1967. And we were challenging the Police Act in many cases because the Police Act required a police permit just to have assembly, whether it's a spontaneous or an organized assembly. You look today, the Peaceful Assembly Act, after years of fighting, has loosened that requirement. You just need to provide notification. And then the Court of Appeal has also decided that even if you don't provide notification, you cannot be penalized. They have struck down a part of the Peaceful Assembly Act that now has not been reinstated by the government. And that's why you see now, even when the Lawan protesters are arrested, they can only be issued compounds under the Emergency Ordinance. And the Peaceful Assembly Act is not used to penalize them. The Bar Council, of course, at that time was had two factions. One, if I may call, the more progressive faction, and one, the more conservative faction. There was an argument that you need to follow the law because we are lawyers. There was an argument that it was so serious that you need to break the law to make the point. And I wouldn't want to say who was on whose side. Of course, there are some people now who said, yeah, we're on the side of asking for the walk. But the ultimate decision had to come down to the 36 led by the president. I can say that even then, the president was really undecided. She was afraid, and she had people around her who had to discuss strategy. And it was good at the end that we all collectively decided to move ahead without applying for a permit, because we knew that if we applied for a permit and the permit is rejected, if we went ahead, it will be a double whammy. So
yes.
Instead, instead do not apply for the permit and just break the law. And we have to break the law. So sometimes I'm very encouraged. And last night I was really heartening when I woke up this morning to see that, you know, despite all the problems, we have so many new young activists prepared to break the law just to do a vigil and prepared to put their bodies on the line and be arrested by the authorities. These are the COVID generation. Ame and my generation were the, I think people call us the Reformasi generation. Mm-hmm. There was the Bersih generation. There was the Harapan generation. This is the COVID generation. Not a very nice name.
No.
But I think it reminds us that it's even more difficult because at that time we had our freedoms, a lot more freedoms. Now it's so difficult and there's emergency in place, there is COVID in place, yet the young people have come out to mobilize in the SSR, the Lawan groups, the different movements. It's really heartening to see that so many young people have come out to do this, and this bodes well for the future of Malaysia.
Yeah, definitely. And I have to tell you this, you know, some of my younger colleagues who watched the film, who watched When Lawyers Walk, actually felt so inspired by, you know, your actions and said, you know, if they did it then, you know, we must continue the fight. We cannot, you know, give in to the hopelessness. So, you know, everything actually, you know, what has happened throughout history really, really matters and also impacts, you know, the decisions and actions of the younger generation, as you said. But let's talk about that day itself, right? So finally, you got the consensus and I'm sure there was a lot of planning that went into making this a reality. Talk to me about that. You know, how did you mobilize? How did you strategize? You know, what were the worst case scenarios that you were preparing yourselves for?
In terms of logistics, a certain staff from the Bar Council had rented buses, and members of the bars were invited to take those buses from Dato' Merdeka. Of course, there were those who went to Putrajaya straight away. So we had buses from KL, from Dato' Merdeka, and there were buses from Dato' Merdeka to Putrajaya. But the bus that I took, I remember what happened, that there were certain entry points to Putrajaya were blocked. Police didn't allow certain buses to go into Putrajaya, where we're supposed to meet. That's the rendezvous point in front of the Palace of Justice. So some of us had to stop at a particular point, and we had to walk for approximately 3 kilometers just to reach the Palace of Justice under the scorching hot sun. So it was quite memorable in that sense as well, because before we could start the official walk for justice, we had walk to reach that destination because we were stopped by the authorities. So you don't see lawyers walking or even like running or jogging on a daily basis, but on that day you see lawyers having to walk from the entrance point to Palace of Justice. We had to walk about 3 kilometers, and when we reached there, there were like hundreds, I would say more than 1,000 lawyers already gathering, waiting for those who had to walk. Because we were stopped by the police and we were not allowed to drive into Putrajaya. So it was memorable in that sense as well.
Yeah, all of you in your suits, no less. I mean, I've watched the film and just can see you guys pouring with sweat.
it was hot, and we had to like dress up as lawyers, because we wanted to make a statement. I mean, we had no choice. It wasn't the best attire to wear when you're protesting under the hot sun.
It made a point. And see, even being stopped, you know, even more of a point was made. Sorry, Edmund, anything you wanted to add to that?
I think the spirit, the camaraderie and the esprit de corps amongst lawyers was first class. We didn't feel that way until we really went down to the ground. And for a lot of younger lawyers now, today, who say, oh, what's the use of doing this? I think this is a very good example of having a concrete pressure plan, and it came true. We didn't take it lying down. But importantly, the group of people that organized, and it's not just Ame and I, Rajan or Roger or Yang Po, Ambi, it's not just us. I think a lot of the names and a lot of the people that supported, organized, came for the meetings and encouraged others are just as important. In fact, more important, because we had to have the numbers. We can't have the usual 10 or 40 or 200 people. And 2,000 in the hot sun were good numbers. If you look at the video, we purposely had people from the Human Rights Committee, of which I was chairing, speak in the video to talk about their own personal experiences. People that at that time were really active, and you may not hear of them today, but there were many people like them. And I want to give credit to all those people that actually supported the march and actually moved with us and had that confidence in the bar to actually make the point. So today, again, what is now the rallying point for younger lawyers, for young activists? And I think it's for the younger ones to decide what's their rallying point, what's their rallying cry. At that time, the law, judiciary, and the legal profession was ours.
Mm-hmm. I would like to echo what Evan says. The real heroes of that day are members of the bar who, under normal circumstances, would not even want to go out to protest. Of course, at that point in time, you had a bunch of young lawyers who are rebel rousers, who are activists, so to speak. So it is not uncommon to see those faces in any protest or giving assistance to those who have been arrested for unlawful assemblies. But to see members of the bar, ordinary members of the bar, coming out in troves, I mean, it is a sight that you will not forget. It is the show of support and protest over an important issue that they strongly believe. And you see lawyers from all walks of life. You have young lawyers, senior members of the bar, walking. It is something that should be remembered.
For sure. Sure. And thankfully, there is this film which, you know, all of us can watch and revisit those memories as well, even if we had no clue about it. How did the both of you feel on that day? You know, because we know that the president then handed over the two memoranda to a government official, you know, on behalf of the who accepted it on behalf of the PM. Then the rain, you know, the heavens opened and it started raining. You know, there's so many things that happened. How were your feelings on that day itself?
For me, it was just anger. I think anger has now been conceived very negatively, but I always talk about anger in terms of positive energy. You need to have anger in a lot of the activism, but how do you channel the anger? And non-violent direct action, which now is so common that everybody does walks or marches, is so boring, right? at that time it was
novel.
Many people want to come up because it was so cool to fight the police and don't care about the permits and get arrested. For a lot of people, not for us, like, I was very afraid. But now it's so common. And now when it's so common, it's not so cool anymore because people do it a lot. So at that time for me, with Lawyer Bureau, with the Malaysian Center for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, the Human Rights Committee, it was just about making sure that people understood what their rights were and were prepared to fight for that rights, but in a cool and, if I call it, a fun way, right? Using this type of non-violent direct action. So I think the idea about this has to continue. We were teaching young people 198 ways of non-violent direct action to Lawyer Bureau. There were different ways. And now you see a lot of people also using it, climbing flagpoles, creating mock graves, to make the point. And these are very important forms of activism that should never die. It should always continue. And this is how we should channel our anger positively. Instead of sitting down on the WhatsApp and just complaining and not getting our hands dirty in the types of the complaints that we have. So as lawyers, what do? The lawyers, we can file cases, we can litigate, we can support clients, we can, of course, also go down to the ground and take part in these activities.
Mm-hmm. Amir, how about you?
Just like Emman, I was angry. I believe those who were present on that day, we were angry. We were very frustrated with what we had witnessed. And, you know, never in my life I would imagine that I would be holding a loudhailer you know, chanting, you know, rallying, asking people to protest. I mean, it is something that I never thought I would even do. I mean, as a member of the bar, but it happened on that day. I mean, it's not something that was planned, but because you were so angry to the extent that you wanted to channel out your anger and you want it to be heard, and then you want some sort of concrete action to be taken by the powers that be. So there was a lot of emotion. But all this anger turns out into a positive vibe collectively. And I think that the collective positive vibe eventually resulted in positive impact. We had the Judicial Appointments Commission. Even though the authorities or the parliamentary may say it's got nothing to do with the work for justice, but looking at the chronology of events, I would say that what we did as a whole had in a way contributed to that positive change. So protests being civil disobedient, protesting in a non-violent way can achieve certain positive results. So I think we need to allow that avenue to be continued, that legacy to be continued by the younger generation instead of just being keyboard warriors. Of course, you can protest through your social media, but sometimes things had to be seen to be done on the ground, not just on the internet.
I think Fahmi Reza, who was there, I think said that because it started to rain and rain quite heavily, mm-hmm. it was actually a very romantic moment. Because in the history of Malaysia, you don't see lawyers, you know, after walking in the sun and then going in the rain in black and white, being drenched and then still, you know, shouting and Ame leading everyone. I think Ame is quite used to it. He doesn't say it all the time, but, you know, it's very common to do his shouting when he goes to the music concerts that he loves to go to. So I don't think that's quite extraordinary for him. But it was really, so the word, I think, captured it. There was anger, but there was also some form of romanticism, if you look back. At that time that we didn't really realize, but an observer like Fahmi would say it was very romantic. And then somebody, yeah, you know, it's so romantic that if you found somebody, you are there, you should actually be proposing to that person. during the rally, it'll be even more romantic.
But, you know, so many good things, you know, as the both of you alluded to, did come from that rally. You know, we did see action. It took a while, but action did happen. And, you know, there were a lot of marches that took place after that, right? You know, do you think that sort of set a precedent for, you know, what was to happen after? We had Bersih, we had Hindraf, we had some human rights walks, I think. So many things happened after that, right?
Yes, but I wouldn't say we started the trend or we started the whole protest movement. Even prior to Walk for Justice, we had like series of protests. We had the Reformasi. I mean, let's not forget, we had massive Reformasi protests in 1998, the early 2000. So this is a continuation of the mission, socio-political culture. Mm-hmm. Whereby in the past, we had protests over social issue, whenever there's social injustice. We already had protests in the 60s, 70s, but the trend continues. It doesn't stop. Whenever there is a grave issue, injustice, people have to do something about it. We need to be collective. We need to send a strong message to the power that be that, you know, sometimes you really have to do things in the proper way. You can't simply abuse the powers that we have. You cannot let some sort of corrupt elements into our institution. So when something of that nature happens, I think you need to take a strong action and you need to be heard. And sometimes to be heard, you really need to go down to the street, pick up a loudhailer and say, we want reform.
As you did back in 2007.
I think the strange thing was after the Walk for Justice, before the Walk for Justice, there was already talk and planning to the credit of Bersih and Hindraf. I'm not too sure, but I remember there was already talk. But the Walk for Justice had to be done at a certain point in time, I remember, because government was already moving ahead with certain things that we were not quite happy about.
Okay.
So Bersih, Hindraf happened, then the funny thing I keep saying is that, you know, the police didn't come down on us, the lawyers, but the police came down really hard on Bersih, really hard on Hindraf. We were there as well. Watching brief observers. And then after that, there was two or three other movements, the Lafa walk, and then there was the Human Rights Day walk, where Ame and I were also arrested. And that period was a very strange period. Badawi was supposed to say that NGOs are the eyes and ears of the government, but yet they were taking action that was contrary to what they were saying. But what it provided was it provided audio visual to the world about how Malaysia was and that things had to change, especially regarding the law, and the Police Act had to go.
And, you know, looking back at the film, how do you think it relates to today's political context and, you know, everything that's happening today?
How it relates to the current political context? Well, you can see that things are not good because of COVID-19, and we have a lot of political uncertainty in the government, and people need to vent out their frustration, or people need to point out that things ought to be done in order to save and protect the public. So when the powers that be do not take heed of the views and voices of the public, sometimes you need to step out from your comfort zone and you need to do something. And I think Eman pointed out that one of the ways that you could show your dissatisfaction, or you can point out to the ineffectiveness of the government, is by doing a peaceful protest, like the white flag movement, for example, the black flag movement. So these are the things that can be done, not because we want to create unnecessary trouble, but we want to highlight and we want to educate the public that things have to be done. Something needs to be changed. Another important point that we need to learn from the walk for justice is that a peaceful assembly can be carried out without any problem, whereby the police can play their role in ensuring that there is no untoward incident, instead of preventing or hampering such peaceful protests or assembly. They should be there to ensure the safety of the participants, to regulate and to make sure that the right of the people in terms of freedom of expression are not hampered. So I think that there's a lesson to be learned as well. And I think the police must also change their mindset and move towards that objective in facilitating the protest in a peaceful manner, rather than being the antagonist or being the party or the power that tries to subvert or to hamper the protests.
Yeah, so when we look backwards on the walk and we now look forward, we cannot deny that political choices influence our everyday context. And so the large block of Barisan National politicians at that time created that kind of political hegemony. And now we see that there's a bit of space opening up, because that kind of political hegemony has actually broken up. And that's actually very interesting, because it actually provides, if you compare backwards, now looking forwards, if you compare the space for differing views and dissent, there's now actually more space, because it's not just black and white. It's not just government against opposition. The opposition has a lot of different factions. Government has also a lot of different factions. We see a larger block of opposition members, largely due to what started in 98 during the Reformasi. And the landscape has changed, although there's still racial politics, there's still corruption. The idea is that you have this younger of COVID generation activists that are keeping the struggle alive, and their arrest last night show that the government is afraid, and we need to keep the government afraid. The Walk for Justice was about keeping the government afraid.
Okay, all right. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but you know, would you like to leave us with any last message, you know, especially to all of those who are coming to watch this film for the first time, or any message at all? What would it be? Amir, you want to go first?
Yes, to the younger generation, do not be afraid to speak up. Whenever you see any social injustice, apart from just voicing out on social media, do something more concrete. It doesn't have to be in the form of assembly. It could be something more to do something about it. I would like to encourage people, and this doesn't necessarily have to be something negative. Activist means someone who wants to do something, take action for the better. And all of us should aspire to be one. And we can put the powers that be in check by being a strong activist.
I just wanted to say that, you know, once every 5 years, casting your vote is not enough. You can see how your votes are so diluted. The idea really is to have every day being in politics. And that is why we need mandate. We need to do it every day, not just wait once every 5 years. Thank you, Juliet.
All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Edmund Bond and Amir Hamza Arshad. They're both lawyers with Amir Bond Advocates. They were part of the 2007 Walk of Justice, which saw, you know, more than 2,000 lawyers and activists heading to Putrajaya to demand reforms to the country's judiciary. All of that is documented in the film When Lawyers Walk, which is directed by Mien Lee and is being re-released this weekend on the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel. Do go ahead and catch it there. It's definitely worth a watch. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, just search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn or on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
What do you want?
Justice!
What do you want?
Justice!
What do you want?
Justice!
We had to do something radical. Previously, the council has sent numerous memoranda to the government pertaining to the judiciary.
What do you want?
All our recommendations and all our proposals for reform have been turned down. It appears that the government has not been listening to us, and we wanted that to change.
Who are we?
Yes, sir.
Who are we?
Yes, sir.
Who are we?
Yes,
sir. Who are we?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.